In our society, we treat anthropology as a field that is applied to other cultures. When we think of anthropologists, we imagine them in the Congo or New Guinea, studying tribal peoples. The field we use to study our own societies is sociology, which I think all reasonable people can agree has become leftist propaganda. Go to the sociology section of the bookstore and try to find a single non-leftist book. And sociology departments at universities are literally 99% left-leaning. What this means is that our society very rarely critically analyzes what's going on inside our own culture in an honest way. Instead, it's always done for politically biased reasons. That makes me sad, since I think there's actually really a lot that's going on today, and it's one of the most interesting events in history, while we're going through some of the most rapid social changes ever. It would be super cool if we had more of an honest intellectual industry that broke down the culture of our society. For example, I've always been looking for a book on nerd or gamer culture, since as of now, I know I can't write that. At the same time, I think there's a lot to unpack on that topic. I sometimes like to pick topics that seem objectively silly and then break them down to the actually important symbolism. I did this with NPCs and incels already. Now I'm going to do so with Karens. For those who don't know, Karen is a term for an annoying middle-aged lady who's entitled. The kind of person who goes to a restaurant and dislikes the service, demanding to speak to the manager. Alternately, the kind of person who calls the police on her neighbor's children playing outside. The thing, though, is that oftentimes silly things show and demonstrate important or meaningful threads. I argue that this is the case with the Karens. I actually think the Karens are a symbolic of a social trend that is destroying Western civilization. That's a pretty reckless claim, but watch the video to see me back it up. Certain aspects of society seem silly even when we encounter them on a daily basis, and others totally normal even when they're insane. Debt is insane, and getting rid of debt can be incredibly difficult, but with PDS Debt, you can find the best way to get out of debt. PDS Debt has customized options for anyone struggling with credit cards, personal loans, collections, or medical bills. If you're making payments every month on your debt and your balances aren't going down, this program is for you. Everyone with $10,000 or more in eligible debt qualifies, and there is no minimum credit score required. I know a lot of people really struggle with debt, and I want PDS to help people, and I think this is one of the greatest issues of our time, which is why I want to intro them to you. And for my viewers, PDS Debt is offering a free debt analysis. It only takes 30 seconds. Head over to pdsdebt.com/whatifaltist to get your debt-free assessment today. So check out PDS Debt and get out of debt now. Part 1, Wisdom from the Past. A video I've been thinking about making for a second is how I think that we were on the verge of an intellectual breakthrough that didn't happen. One of the most important themes of my channel is looking to see the patterns in history in order to try to figure out underlying principles under which it operates. Almost all of the important authors of that field wrote around the time of the world wars a century ago. This includes Amaury de Riencourt, Spengler, Carol Quigley, Will Durant, Arnold Toynbee, or William McNeill. The idea of trying to figure out the underlying principles of history was gaining traction as a field around the time of the World Wars. Then in the 1960s, with the social changes associated with that decade, the idea of using history to understand the world became taboo. All the authors in this field, barring Fabry and I, who are very recent, are non-Western authors like Azargat, Yuval Noah Harari, or Peter Turchin, since in the West we had to throw away the shackles of the past to reach a new utopia. One of the most important points is that from all of those authors a century ago, and keep in mind the sheer neurological power of putting all these thinkers together, is something ludicrously advanced, is they all agreed that the most dangerous thing in the world was the rise of bureaucracy. Keep in mind, these were people who lived through the world wars. They all agreed that even more so than those giant wars, the Soviets or the Nazis, that the rise of the bureaucracy was the factor that put Western and global civilization in the most danger. They agreed about this since they had all studied the factors that result in civilizational entropy. Every civilization eventually stagnates or declines. Thus, it makes sense for a historian to try to look for the factors which could possibly precipitate that, since it's effectively a natural law that your society will decline at some point. They all agreed to the bureaucracy, since it naturally sucks up resources and has no protective element against it, would just continue to bloat, eventually destroying the entire society and Western civilization. These authors all agreed that the destruction of the bureaucracy in the post-World War II period was the most important thing that the society had to do now. For a frame of reference, these authors got a lot right. Amaury Duranyacourt predicted the direction modern feminism took, as well as the trans movement. Carol Quigley predicted the collapse of the Soviet Union, the decline of hippie values with the baby boomer generation, and ironically predicted the rise of a new religion in the 21st century. He, alongside many other authors, predicted imminent population collapse and decadence. And on top of that, Spengler predicted in the 21st century it would be an era of nihilism with Caesarism developing. Then, on top of that, you would see population collapses as people would move to the countryside to escape the mechanical and sterile nature of that society. And so these authors weren't idiots. This is since the era around which these authors were writing had the managerial revolution, or a profound sociological change in which the world's ruling class shifted from aristocrats or business moguls to college-educated bureaucrats. This is since the growths in population, urbanization, or generally scale alongside the governments needed to manage the world's wars meant that you needed to have large bureaucracies in order to manage just the sheer size of modern society. The reason I'm bringing all of this up is there are constantly a million different trajectories that societies can take at any given moment. Alternately, the human mind experiences a million different emotions on a monthly basis. The emotions that a society chooses to take seriously relate to its social structure and self-interest. For example, as a man, there are points where I've definitely wanted to murder someone, where I feel a flash of rage at someone pissing me off. Our society doesn't honor this at all, in that it's kind of taboo to even say that, even though I think it's an emotion most men experience. When people say men should express their emotions, they don't mean that way. That being said, there are eras of history where if someone insulted me and felt enraged, that I would legally be allowed to kill them on the spot. Thus, that expression of emotion is valid and socially sanctioned. An argument I will make in this video is that people with the emotional state of Karens have always existed, but that in our era, we choose to enable them due to the self-interest of the ruling class. In the same way that in Dark Age Europe or feudal Japan, they enabled angry young men to fight duels, since those were the kinds of people who were in charge of society. When you look at the demands Karens make, it's almost always to a bureaucracy. I like to speak to the manager. That signifies implicitly a managerial structure, and that the guy who runs the restaurant isn't a mom-and-pop shop who's a sole proprietor, but works for some giant company in which he's a transitory guy. This is a very important distinction, since it radically changes the incentives towards Karens in ways we'll see. One of my favorite political books ever is The Leviathan and Its Enemies by Samuel Francis. This book was so profound for me, since as I read it, I felt like someone in the Middle Ages who just had feudalism explained to him. For someone living in the year 1300, they probably rarely thought about feudalism itself. It was just the way the world worked. We're much the same today, in which most people have no idea how our society is actually governed, because they just see it as normal. Samuel Francis explained all of modern society as an attempt by the bureaucracy to keep expanding at all costs. I'm not going to get into all of this, but here's a text wall if you want to know more. This frankly deserves to be its own video at some point. He showed how every facet of society, between media, religion, politics, economy, or anything else you could possibly think of, is tailored towards the goal of the continuous expansion of the bureaucracy. The best strategy the bureaucracy developed for this was to find issues that were impossible to solve, and then constantly ask for more funding to fix them, while ideally, to in the process actually make the problem worse. A point Sam Francis makes, which is kind of funny, is that he says the bureaucracy and the managerial class grew resentful of the white working class since their lives actually improved so much they didn't want the bureaucracy anymore. No Irish or Italian American steelworker is going to be complaining about how exploitive Protestant capitalism is anymore. Instead, the bureaucracy picks issues like climate change, racial politics, or sexual politics, and then gradually sinks their teeth into them. The progress in these fields is never acknowledged, since that would remove the need for bureaucratic funding. If we acknowledged that we have a vast amount of overrepresentation for Black Americans due to affirmative action across media or high-ranking positions, and keep in mind, Black Americans are only 13% of the population, then the people whose job it is to push for it wouldn't be necessary anymore, so they'll never admit that. We're not going to push for nuclear power since that would actually be a solution to climate change. Rather, we'll push for expensive green tech that won't work. We can't acknowledge that young women make more money than young men, or twice as many young women go to college than men, since that would, again, solve the issue. This may sound unbelievably cynical for me to say, but keep in mind, this is in the direct financial interests of the people involved. Also, a lot of these people genuinely can't lose their jobs because most people in America are financially struggling, and so they can rationalize this to say that I need to keep doing this to support my family. And if you look over history, people can get incredibly cynical when the incentive structures line up for it, whether the Atlantic slave trade as an example, where people would buy slaves and then work them to death before buying more slaves with that money, or the genocide of the American Midwest in the Beaver Wars by the Iroquois to get cheaper beaver pelts. Here's where all of this fits in. The reason we enable the silly emotions of Karens is that every time the Karens ask for something, it involves the expansion of the bureaucracy. Your neighbor is building a shed that you can only barely see and doesn't affect your life. You complain to the HOA or local government. They get to exert power on your behalf. You don't like the food at a restaurant? You appeal to the manager. He gets to exert authority on your behalf. Someone complains that they don't like a certain racial type of Hollywood characters, then that allows the administrative systems of that film studio to exert more authority. You know in toxic relationships how people can play into each other's worst aspects in order to derive some sort of benefit? A husband who's in a sexless marriage he hates with a nagging wife stays with her since he wants to maintain the external appearance to his community that he's not an incel. Meanwhile, his wife who loathes him stays with him since they bought the house 10 years ago and prices were lower, and it's the best house she can get. Neither party is really doing the right thing, but they derive enough benefit from this crappy relationship to keep playing into each other. This is the toxic relationship between the managerial class and Karens to push the other's interests. The thing we'll get to later is that the Karens have such a good relationship with the managerial class, since the Karens are never satisfied. They could have an amazing life, but they will find some detail to dislike, like the food not being warm enough, or low-cost housing being built a few miles from them. It's so bizarre that this demographic, or upper-middle-class women, are probably the most privileged demographic in history, but at the same time, they find so much to be resentful about. This is wonderful for the bureaucracy, since it keeps on giving them cover to keep growing themselves. Something that's always shocked me is how often these great institutions cave to the demands of radical leftists. For example, how many leftist state governments let the Summer of Love happen? Alternately, how Columbia or NYU are appeasing their pro-Hamas protesters, or Disney caving to internet leftists who want them to be more weak. The thing is, you can just choose to not cave to demands. You can just use me as an example. I receive a metric ton of garbage thrown at me on a weekly basis due to being a public figure. That being said, I have no incentive to cave into these criticisms, so I'll happily tell you all to go to hell. Most of these far-left critics only represent something like 10% of America's population, and for multinational companies, it's some absolutely minuscule percentage of their global market. It's inside the self-interest of the managers to cave, since they don't own the business. For me and this YouTube channel, I'm generally invested in the quality of the channel, since my life depends on the output. That being said, if you're a branch manager at a McDonald's, your only incentive is to not start a fight. So yes, you will cave to these ridiculous demands just to make your life easier. Bureaucracies also get involved in cover-your-ass battles in which no one wants to be held accountable for negative choices. One of those brilliant things I've ever read about politics is from Leviathan and Its Enemies, where Samuel Francis said, "A very tremendous amount of the left is driven off how the managerial class started to manage the companies that the 19th century bourgeoisie founded, and there's always this undercurrent of resentment for the managers having to manage these companies that they themselves did not create." And you could view the entirety of the managerial class as just resentment at the bourgeoisie, and even more so the earlier aristocracy, and the desire to destroy them and their world at all costs. The managerial class wants to cave to these demands, since it pushes the self-interest of the managers. People talk about how the deep state has more influence on policy than the presidents, and I think that's basically true, in that you see an anti-deep state president like Trump show up, but the US kept on doing a lot of the same bad stuff, even though he directly said he didn't want to. This happens since the president will only be there for 4 to 8 years, while these deep state interests are there forever. Thus, they've been able to needle their power and interests for a very long time. There's a wonderful British show called Yes Minister about this. The plot follows government bureaucrats who try to stop the elected politician from accomplishing anything. It's very funny. If you look at Disney, they have stopped making movies that anyone wants to watch, given the people who actually make good content tend to be creatives. Creatives are unpredictable, and the exact opposite kind of people as the managerial class. They don't want to show up at 9 a.m. in the morning, they often go past deadlines and think procedure is retarded. Thus, the managers hate them. The creatives come and go, but the managerial class remains. What happens at a company like Disney is that the managers gradually squeeze out the creatives, since the managers don't get replaced and there is no counterforce against managerial bloat. Keep in mind, the managers don't really make any money whether or not the company does well or poorly, since they're salaried. This is why we have Terminator 13, because their incentive is to make something predictable that they know will make some money rather than anything good. Thus, the incentive for the managerial class is to push DEI stuff, which allows more managers to manage the DEI stuff at the expense of actually making good movies, since they have no financial reward for that. Also, managers have largely never been held responsible for anything serious in their lives. Thus, they have no concept of the sorts of things that result in companies surviving or doing well. Thus, they will kill the organization without knowing why. This is how so many organizations across the Western world, whether media, education, pop culture, the government bureaucracy, and so many more, have been killed by DEI. Since the managerial class just wants to grow their numbers and they don't care about the survival of the organism. For a brief shameless plug, you guys should check out my second podcast, History 102, where I take an hour to explain different historic topics with Eric Torenberg, such as the fall of Rome, modern Chinese history, the world wars, or the Vikings. If you want to learn history in a fun conversational way, check out History 102. Part 2, Feminine Dominance. It's ironic. We are the most intelligent age in history in many ways. If you understood the complexity of the chips that go into the device you're currently watching this video on, you would see that on a technical basis, our society is ludicrously impressive. That being said, we are the most profoundly stupid age in history in other ways. For example, how we think men and women are the same, how we think we can infinitely print money with no consequences, and especially so, as I alluded to before, how we are so willfully blind to the nature of gender relations. From studies we've found men and women are equally aggressive. It's just that for men, this aggression is externalized into war, and for women, into relationships. We all know from high school, or even dating today, how women will get involved in incredibly petty or cruel drama. This is since, on an evolutionary basis, women benefit from doing this and it increases their reproductive success. GSR is a term for female relational warfare, or gossiping, shaming, and rallying. Other aspects of female relational warfare are envy, crabs-in-the-bucket mindset, hyperconsumption, undermining, free-riding, magical thinking, mate suppression, giving bad advice, and more. All of this largely happens covertly in that women will never admit their aggression, but they continue to push these under the surface, normally using various ideologies as rationalizations to provide cover. One of the most important parts of female nature stems from their fundamental insecurity. In the state of nature, women can't defend themselves against men due to their physical weakness. This is also combined with all human societies being patriarchies, in which men hold the positions of power. Thus, toxic femininity will try to use every hook or crook as a way to get even with men. This includes verbal ability, using sexuality as leverage, resource accumulation, or working together as a group. A point I want to make explicitly clear as a way of getting around Naxalt, or not all X are like that, is that I'm talking about the feminine, not women. There are certain traits associated with masculinity and femininity. In general, about 15% of men are more feminine and 15% of women are more masculine. There are women who have more masculine-like psychologies. I'm speaking in demographic generalities here. The second is that this is explicitly about toxic femininity or toxic masculinity. There's this whole mental school in the red pill that toxic masculinity doesn't exist. This is an argument from definition, something I hate and I would ban if I was dictator. There definitely is toxic masculinity, in that men are toxic in ways that women aren't, in that men will burn villages down, rob, or turn women into sex slaves. The reality, though, is that almost none of that happens anymore in the modern West, and we are the society with the least of these behaviors ever. In almost all cases, when feminists talk about toxic masculinity, they're projecting how toxic femininity acts. I remember there was this case in the Canadian Parliament where they were complaining about a guy angrily bumping into another guy being a sign of toxic masculinity. Toxic masculinity would be challenging the other guy to the duel. I don't think toxic masculinity even processes that as a choice, but that is how toxic femininity acts. I'm describing toxic feminine behavior here. Not all women act like this, and like all humans, women exist on a gradation from toxic to healthy. There is also the healthy feminine, which is loving, inspiring, optimistic, honest, nice, and humble. When I'm talking here, I'm not insulting all women, rather criticizing a sub-demographic. In the same way I talk about violent crime statistics, I'm criticizing a sub-demographic of toxic men. The fact, though, that any criticism of women, even explicitly toxic women, is treated as misogynistic in our society is very telling about our social structure, in my opinion at least. One of my good friends and the co-host of my former podcast, Common Ground, Dave Hamilton, wrote a book on dating called The Nice Guy's Guide to Dating. It's very good. He developed Hamilton's law of female dominance, or the idea that women will push the boundaries in relationships as far as they can until they get enforced. If you have a relationship with a woman besides your mother, this is kind of obvious. The reason your girlfriend or wife doesn't like you hanging out with your friends, that the towel in the bathroom doesn't match the carpet, or expects you to say feminist talking points like that men are trash, is since she's trying to test to see what your boundaries are. It's a way of testing you. This is called a shit test. My favorite video by my good friend Homath is called Who's a 10? It's about why women will say that all women are 10s or that all women are as attractive as they could possibly be. The thing is that they know this is stupid, and they know that we know that this is stupid. The reality is that the reason they make this silly claim is that by saying every woman is a 10 gives women of all levels of attractiveness a positional advantage in negotiating with men. I'd say that feminism is this on a macro international scale, in which feminism is a framework through which women can more effectively negotiate with men. What this demonstrates is that toxic femininity will pick symbolic issues that aren't actually about the underlying point. This is one of the most important things to understand when you're arguing with women, that in most cases, the thing they're arguing about is not the actual problem. For example, if your girlfriend picks some inane detail to argue over, the reality is that she probably doesn't respect you and is demonstrating that. If your girlfriend doesn't like you watching porn, she probably doesn't actually care about porn per se on a moral basis. She just wants to maintain a sexual monopoly over you. Women generally see the world through emotional states and men largely through physical states. You can see this in everything each of the sexes do. When men write stories, they write about the plot or the things that happen, and women write out the internal emotional states of the characters involved. When something happens, most women will immediately think about how it makes them feel, and men what physically happened. When women talk about their problems, they largely want sympathy, and men want solutions. Thus, with toxic women, they play power games that try to get people to enforce their emotional states. Ironically, they try to get people to accept absurdities as a way to demonstrate their power. When a woman expects you to bend reality for her emotions, this is what's happening. For example, if you criticize her and say that she hasn't been emotionally sensitive to your needs lately, then she goes on a rant about how she's only been doing that since you're toxic and controlling and thus deserve it. What she's subconsciously trying to do is to get you to submit to her, to put her needs before yours. Christianity says that the greatest sin is pride, and I think that's one of the most profound truths that has ever been discovered in history. The most toxic element of male and female psychology is pride in differing ways. For men, it's the idea of total dominance. The Nazis wanting to genocide Eastern Europe for their own Lebensraum. For women, it's getting something for nothing. Toxic femininity gets off on the idea of not being held to standards while getting whatever they want. A girl who's so hot she doesn't have to do anything for men, and they will still buy her vacations, cars, or obsess over her. Men generally want power directly, women indirectly. If you went back to the conditions humans evolved in, and this is still really true today, power comes from a spear tip or the muzzle of a gun. Those are both used by men, and thus society is a patriarchy. Thus, for women, their aim is to have men who obsess over them and will defend them, since they can't protect themselves. Under all these explanations, the Karen making the ridiculous ask is a form of power play. When she's complaining about her neighbor's kids running a lemonade stand, the salmon ceviche not having the right gluten-free sauce, or a movie not having enough black people, it's really a feminine dominance game. Can I make other people accept my absurdities against their own best interests? To tie this back to the earlier section, the reason the bureaucracy plays into this is that since this toxic power will keep pushing until it gets stopped. And that's perfect for the bureaucracy. The bureaucracy wants to have infinite demands, since that way it'll never not be needed. I've said before in multiple videos why the left in our society in general caters to women. How any criticism of a woman will get you tarred and feathered as sexist. How women can abort their babies. If they don't like a hookup, they can say the man assaulted them. They don't have to sleep with their husband, they aren't expected to be nice, chaste, or have children, or be respectful. There is literally no place where you can hold a woman to any standard. The reasoning for this is the bureaucracy and women have mutual self-interests. From the bureaucracy's side of things, women are more submissive, agreeable, socialized, and generally make easier cogs in the machine that is industrial civilization. There is no point where you push women too far and they fight back. Meanwhile, for men, there is. Secondly, on women's side, the bureaucracy has liberated women from men. They don't need to supply them with resources or to physically protect them. After millennia, women no longer need to please men to survive. The reason our society has vilified Karens is twofold, or why their obnoxiousness has gotten so extreme that it's become a cultural meme. The irony is that Karens are the only demographic of women who the left is comfortable making fun of. This is probably since Karens are coded as white and upper or middle class. The first is that when a girl is young and attractive, we just put up with this ridiculousness. If a hot girl acts like a Karen, society respects it a little more, since there's this sense that she's attractive enough that people are willing to put up with her behavior. Karens, ironically, after growing older and less attractive, think they can still do these kinds of behaviors, and I think so as a form of coping with losing their looks. The disjoint between their expectations and the reality becomes jarring. The second thing is that the name Karen peaked in popularity in the 50s and 60s, making this generation part of the end of the baby boomers. The boomers themselves have a reputation for entitlement, which I assume must play into this. I made a video on the baby boomers here. The boomers are also by far the least liked generation. For baby boomer women, their entire lives have involved women getting more influence. They were growing up when the second wave of feminism was rising. Then, since that point, women gradually were liberalized compared to men. Over that time, the society has lost any protections against toxic femininity, and the value of female sexuality has increased. What this means is that they have no frame of reference for someone even holding toxic femininity in check. Part 3. Ignorance. An ironic thing is that the thing I dislike the most about the Karens is probably not what you'd expect. It's that they propound such a banal and meaningless worldview. The things they care about are so stupid and irrelevant. I don't want to live in a world in which we spend our lives worrying about the exact kind of granite your kitchen countertop is. I've nearly died 4 times. Each time I've come back thinking, what do I actually want out of life? The conclusion I've come to each time is not that. It always shocks me that people's lives are consumed by such complete minutiae, and when they're on their deathbeds, there's no chance they'll care about that. The thing is that everyone in our society is expected to play along with this game. I've had to do so my entire life, and I'm just tired of it. In our culture, you have to focus on money, sex, the culture war, or materialism. Doing anything else is cringe. Philosophy, history, religion, ethnicity, art, culture, anthropology, and the other profound things that people look back upon centuries later are all taboo or hopelessly pretentious in our culture. Anyone who talks about meaning or deeper questions is mocked by the Karens. This is why we're living in a society that's literally committing suicide, publicly. It's purposely doing degrowth, importing immigrants for the express purpose of replacing the native population, printing the most money of any era in history, the birth rate is crashing, and nihilism is the state church. However, if you bring these up, you're hopelessly uncool. You should just shut up, work, and consume product. The people I blame the most for this are the Karens. The reason I say that is that the Karens' goals are petty status competitions and hyper-consumption. Anything that takes away from that goes against their goals. If America was worried about China as a potential geopolitical threat, or if people wanted to build a beautiful cathedral in their town, or even try to build low-cost housing, the Karens would mock that since it would take away from their own personal power. Whenever we try to accomplish things, the Karens try to either use social stigma or regulations to stop it. The reason those historians before said the bureaucracy was so worrying was that it would cut down any growth out of envy. The reason technological innovation, especially in Europe, has crashed since the world wars is due to regulation. The only fields where there really are social mobility for young men are content creating or technology, since they're the only fields that aren't regulated. I see this all the time with Karens, almost all hating Elon Musk, since he's a great man. Whether or not you like or dislike him, he is doing great things with good motivations. Karens hate Alexander the Greats and make fun of Napoleons. They are envious, nihilistic forces upon the world. I remember when I hiked the Appalachian Trail at age 18, where I walked 600 miles alone, and there were many middle-aged women from my hometown, or Karens who were criticizing me for doing so. There was almost no substance to these criticisms, alleging it was weird somehow without actually explaining why it was weird. The irony is that a teenage man trying to make himself stronger through going on an adventure like that is a universal positive. No one's getting hurt and he's making himself better, but it does stand against the longhouse. However, that's the nature of GSR. I was watching a debate between Myron Gaines from Fresh and Fit and Ethan Klein from H3 Productions. Ethan Klein was trying to destroy Myron's reputation by saying it was bad that he was serving underage girls water in the same type of solo cup for which he served older girls liquor with. I had to stop since it was the stupidest thing I'd ever heard. To be honest, I don't really know why 18-year-olds drinking is that bad. I did it when I was 18, as did almost all people in history, including most countries around the world today. That being said, Ethan was just trying to say it's icky, thus to cancel Myron through social shaming. Karens operate off this icky principle, which in reality just serves their self-interest. A topic which I could go off on for a very long time since I'm a Zoomer who saw the effects of this directly, is I think one of the worst things the Karens have done is helicopter parenting, where, growing up, and I'm 22, I would see families where parents wouldn't let their kids walk 4 blocks alone to school, even at age 18, or where parents considered moving to the states where their children went to college so that they could follow them to college, and just absolutely insane stuff. And it's the same demographic as Karens, where they're petrified of slight minutiae, but the reality is that coddling these kids so much means they're just not functional adults, and it's caused mass anxiety and social issues for Gen Z. I used to live in Mexico for 6 months, and although there are plenty of reasons why I moved back to America, and Mexico is very much not a perfect country, there are a lot of things I really loved about Mexico, and Mexico always has a very warm place in my heart. And the thing I like the most about Mexico is not everyone has a giant stick up their ass there. And so if you go to a third world country, like Egypt or Thailand or South Africa, you see that the Karens have really changed the fabric of daily life in a very profound way. It's really remarkable to see how much Karenism affects every single level of daily life. And a lot of it is just because the Karens don't like the idea of other people having more fun than them. And in Mexico, you have a really lively street life with people selling stuff in the street or people hanging out in the street or partying or dancing. And that's just impossible in America due to Karens shutting that stuff down. Alternately, I think it's absolutely insane that we're at a point where it's not normal for kids to play outside, which is just something that the rest of history would totally take for granted, because Karens will call the police on other people's kids playing outside. And as a Zoomer, I watch older TV shows and older movies, and it's so obvious that we used to be a much happier and a much looser society. Back in the day, after work, guys would head to the bar together and hang out. That doesn't really happen anymore because their Karen wives don't like them doing that. Or you'll watch movies like Jackass or Ferris Bueller's Day Off, and those movies would never get made today because the Karens hate people having reckless fun. And I think it's just destroyed our entire society. The thing our society shames people for versus the things it doesn't shame people for are so ludicrous. If a young man starts a stamp collection, he's going to be ruthlessly mocked. The thing is he's not hurting anyone, and it's way better than being a criminal or so many other things. Ironically, we will mock a young man for reading history or philosophy and trying to understand the world more so than him just going to the club and partying like a degenerate, even though the first two things are objectively better for him as an individual and society. At the same time, our society apologizes for literal criminals. We enable prepubescent children to have life-changing surgeries with no guidance. We let teachers and students dress up as furries. How come the guy who has the stamp collection gets mocked, but not the kid in the furry suit? This is since for Karens, they envy the first since he actually has interests and does stuff. Meanwhile, they pity the furry and feel good about how superior they are to him. This is why women give each other purposely bad advice, like be promiscuous, gain weight, be ugly, be annoying, disrespectful, or be a lesbian. It's a way of removing competition. I'm so tired of going to restaurants where the waiter asks me if I want a lemon with my iced tea. In what universe would I possibly care? The reason they do that, though, is that there are Karens who would get worked up about that. Meanwhile, I'll bring up the fact that at current trends, the world's population is about to totally plummet, while our currency is on the brink of total collapse and breakdown, and then I get mocked for being a doomer. Our society is insane in that we obsess over useless details while completely ignoring the reality of the universe or the things that really matter. Karens take pride in their ignorance and treat it as a virtue. Growing up, I heard way too many of, "I'm not some fancy schmancy blank." It's a demographic that takes pride in not knowing anything about a political topic, but then forcing you to agree with them. They take pride in not knowing classical literature and mocking anyone who does. Karens don't like French food. They prefer sliders since it's not complicated. Karens don't like neoclassical architecture. They prefer McMansions. Karens don't want a movie about the struggles of the modern working man. They want Terminator 13. They are driven by envy and hate anything that would force them to improve or even think about improving. One of the Nazi ministers, either Goebbels or Goering, I can't remember which, wrote an essay about a group in Nazi Germany who tried to use Nazi values as a way to get rid of nice things. They would complain about attractive girls being used in advertisements, neighbors having loud parties, and that kind of stuff. The Nazi writer said that these people were just busybodies who didn't like that other people could have more fun than them. He said that this was completely antithetical to Nazi values. These are the Karens in an earlier society which didn't enable them. Karens are the same demographic as what the witches were 400 years ago. They're women whose children are often out of the picture and don't have much else going on. When they were talking about witches, these were supposed to be women who consorted with the devil to bring chaos on the world. If you want to extrapolate the symbolism out of this, it's people motivated by envy and hatred of life who try to drag society down through nihilism. Isn't it ironic that the era which has enabled Karens the most is the era of history, which is also committing suicide as a civilization from nihilism? In the long term, Karens can't be around for much longer. They're just fundamentally too silly. Only a stupidly wealthy society can afford to have Karens. They're also propelled by the managerial class, who is basically doing everything they can to wipe themselves out. As life gets harder, people will get slapped in the face by reality. That will make them respect the more primal, meaningful elements of reality, not whether or not their chair has a drink rest. Good riddance, if you ask me. There will come a point where we'll have to explain what Karens were to our grandkids, and we'll have to say, you know, things were different back then.